I am Kisagotani. That's my name. And I was given that name when I was very young. Well, obviously, most of us get our names when we're young. Gotami is my family name, and Kisa means skinny, because I'm such a scrawny girl. And it's just lovely to be with you all here, actually, sitting together. It's just reminding me of something I heard the Buddha say recently. He said, with good friends, even a fool can be wise. So I just have this sense, we have this opportunity to share in our wisdom. He said, keep good company and wisdom grows. Those who keep company with those of good heart can be freed from suffering. We have to understand suffering, the cause of suffering, its end, and the Eightfold Way to the end of suffering. These are the Four Noble Truths. So we need to know these truths in our own lives, in our own experience. We need to really see how that works for us. So I'm going to tell you my life story and how that was for me, how I came to understand suffering more deeply. And how doing that changed my life completely. And you might think about what changes there have been in your life, what turning points there have been. I think throughout our lives we have turning points, big and small. We have, you know, lots of little things that, oh yeah, if that hadn't happened, I'd have been on a different course. And yeah, some of those, you know, we have lots and lots of little ones. We might have big turning points. So I had a really big event in my life that I'll tell you about. But you can think about, yeah, kind of what has shaped the direction of your life. And maybe we can talk to each other a bit more about that. Just telling our life stories is a great thing to do. We won't have time to do that this evening, but it's really a good thing to reflect on your life and how it came to be, really, how it's turned out the way it is at the moment. So I was born in a poor family. It's probably partly why I was so skinny. We didn't have that much. And it wasn't that easy to find a husband for me because we didn't have much of a dowry. But somehow it was arranged that I married into a quite well-off family. I married a banker's son. So, you know, that was a reasonable match. That was good. But, well, it's in my day, as it is in India for me, actually being a woman is like being a possession. I went from being my father's possession to my husband's possession. And, well, the family just didn't really take me in. It was just like I went to live in the extended family of my husband, as people do, and they treated me badly. Partly because I was from a poor family, they despised me. But anyway, I was just, you know, the wife, the new wife in the scene. So it was, I really missed my family. It was really difficult to start with. They treated me a bit like a servant. They were always really sort of scornful and sarcastic to me. It was just, yeah, it wasn't very nice. I just didn't feel I fitted in or I'd got a home there. But quite quickly I fell pregnant, and once my baby was born, I had a baby boy, and that changed everything. I then fulfilled what I was meant to do for the family. I produced the son and heir, and they started to treat me with respect. They started to treat me as one of the family, so things looked up. I was a lot more, you know, life was a lot better then. It was much more comfortable. Plus, I'd just got this gorgeous baby boy. I mean, he was just so beautiful. He was just such a lovely child. You know, if you could see his smile, just such lovely as he grew. I just didn't know it was possible to love so fully, actually. There was just so much love in my heart for this baby. Yeah, so life was completely different after I had my son. So I looked after him, and he grew well, and, you know, started to walk and run about and enjoy life. And it was lovely watching him do that as well. It was like seeing life through fresh eyes, just sort of seeing it through his eyes, watching him exploring and discovering the world. But one day he started crying, and yeah, wasn't really doing anything. He was in his bed, and I realised he was ill. He'd got a fever. I sat with him and tried to look after him. I did everything I could to care for him. But the fever was just like really raging. It just got worse. And eventually, he just stopped breathing and started to get cold. My son had died, but I just couldn't bear that at the time. I couldn't see it. I just went into this kind of complete denial. It was just such an unbearable thing to lose this beloved baby. And I knew I just thought the family would like want to chuck him out and chuck me out again, really. I just thought I was going to lose my place in the family and life was going to be horrible again. So I was just like completely beside myself. I just really couldn't take on board what had happened. Just so distraught. And I just had to sort of make this awful thing better, make it right somehow. That's sort of how I saw it. So I just gathered up my baby, my toddler, and just went out into the street. I was just like wailing and completely distraught, crying, pleading, and just calling out for someone to help. Please find me medicine, make my child better again. He just needs medicine, he needs something. Help me find a way to make things okay. I was just so full of fear and grief and not really, you know, just knowing what was going on. I didn't even really notice people's reactions to me. I must have been a real sight, but I couldn't really take in the people around me. I just couldn't understand why someone wasn't coming to help me. And eventually, as I just went around all the streets around my home, someone stopped and spoke to me. Someone came up and approached me. And he seemed calm and wise and kind. So I was just really sort of pleading with him as I'd been sort of crying in the streets. Can you make my baby well? Have you got some medicine? Can you make my baby well? What can you do? And he looked and said, well, no, I haven't, but I know who could help you. What you need to do is go and see the Buddha. There's this wise man in the area at the moment. Go and see him. I think he might be able to help you. Go and see the awakened one. So I was, okay, where is he, where is he? And he sort of directed me to where in the forest the Buddha was camping out at the time, teaching. And so I rushed over there, still carrying my dead child. And I arrived into this scene. The Buddha was there with his followers, just giving some teachings. He was just explaining to them, just discussing how things were, how to help them in their lives. And I was completely oblivious to this, of course, still totally distraught, rushing in, saying, help, help, someone's got to do something, you've got to make my baby well. It must have been a real interruption to this scene, but I didn't really know what was going on. And the Buddha just stopped and looked at me. He's actually a cousin of mine. I'd had met him before as a distant cousin, but I couldn't take that in at the time either. I didn't know who this man was, but he just really looked at me. He stopped and sort of clocked me across the gathering and just really took me in. It's like just really having someone really look at me. But I was still all over the place. So I'm asking him, as I had been everyone, get me some medicine? I want some medicine for my child. I've got to make him well again. And the Buddha said, well, yeah, I could help you. I can help you. But what I'm going to need is some mustard seed, just a little bit of mustard seed, just a mustard seed. So you need to go and get that for me. I said, yeah, okay, fine, no trouble. I mean, everyone's got mustard seed for making a curry. No trouble at all. I was excited and hopeful. And he said, but hang on, there's another thing. It's got to be a seed from a house that hasn't known death. Okay, fine, I'm going to get this mustard seed. So I just rushed back off into the village. Rushed up to the first house I came to, dashing up to the door, knocking on the door. And someone came to the door, the wife of the house came to the door, and I said, have you got some mustard seed? I need some medicine for my child. Have you got some mustard seed? Can I have some? And she said, oh, of course, yes. I said, oh, but it needs to be that no one's died here, that you haven't known death. And she came back and she looked at me and said, well, no, my aunt died here in this house 2 years ago. Your mustard seed's no good then. That's no use. Well, she said, you know, the dead are many, the living are few. That's how it is. But I was just off, not really listening by then, rushing up to the next house. I knocked on the next house door, asked again, have you got a mustard seed? Has anybody died here? I said, well, of course, you'll be very welcome to some mustard seed, but my brother had an accident and he lay here till he died. He was here in this house. So, no, that's, you know, of course I've no death. So I was, oh, yeah, okay, sorry to trouble you, but yeah, your mustard seed won't help me. I'll try the next house. And I just went on and on like this, knocking at the doors, hearing the different stories. Now, my grandparents are both dead. They both lived here. My father died quite recently of a fever. On and on, hearing the stories, people's loss, house after house. Everywhere it was the same. Everyone knew death. And I started to feel for these people. More and more their sorrow sort of seeped into my heart, just started to soften me, started to soften my self-concern. Everyone had lost someone they'd loved. And everywhere I went, people had the same reply for me. Who can count how many have died? The dead are many, the living are few. And the more I went on, the more my pace was sort of slowing, I was starting to calm a bit, and my heart was just softening more and more with love for these people in their loss. And I just started to see, well, it wasn't all about me, in a way. It wasn't just me that this was all about. It wasn't about any one house or one family or even my village alone. It was going to be like this across the whole world. It's part of being human. It's part of everything. Everything's changing. Everything's impermanent. Everything that lives dies. I was just sort of starting to get some sense of this. And at the next house, a young woman answered the door. Just one more time, I tried. I went through my request. Though I really was beginning to know how it was going to go by then. And this woman, she looked at me. She really looked at me, and she looked at my son, and tears came to her eyes, and she said, my baby died 6 months ago. And we looked at each other and just really took each other in with the sadness of that. I could feel for her, and I could see she was feeling for me. It's like we could cry together, just standing there with our bereavements. And it was like my heart broke open and my grief could flood in fully. I could really feel what I needed to feel for my son, for myself, for my life, the sadness of that for the first time. And it wasn't just my grief, it was grief for me, it was grief for this other young woman of my age that I was with. It was grief for everyone, it was grief for the world. And I just wept and wept. It was like, yeah, my feeling was part of something enormous for all of humanity. I could just sense that so many tears have flowed through countless lives, all through time and space, all these human lives. I've got so many tears in them. It was just like my whole being was flooded with understanding, compassion. And the sorrow had a strange sort of sweetness to it, an unexpected sweetness, and a calmness. The more I wept, the more calm I became. It's like I could really understand what I needed to, very deeply. And I understood too that the Buddha knew all this. He understood all this that I was beginning to understand very deeply too. He knows this is how things are for the whole world. It's part of being human, part of everything. Everything's impermanent, everywhere. And the Buddha had known the kindest way to get through to me in this completely kind of crazed state I was in. He'd known how to reach me, how to help me to see what I needed to. So I walked to the charnel ground where we leave our dead to and I was able to lay my son's body down there at last, just very tenderly covering it over, leave him there to rest. And as I did that, it was as though I was also starting to lay down some of the burden of my self-clinging, my self-preoccupation. I could feel the weight of how I'd been and start to put that down with my son. And so I went back to the Buddha. I left my son and went back to the Buddha by myself. And he greeted me and said, "Did you find the mustard seed? Have you brought me the mustard seed, Gotami?" I said, "The task of the mustard seed is done. Please be my support. Please help me." The Buddha replied, "To people whose life and thoughts are all centered on children and possessions, death comes like a great flood in the night, bearing away the sleeping village." And as we spoke, any last uncertainties about things left me. I saw fully for myself, really fully, that everything was change and flow. My sense of myself was change and flow. Everything I experienced was changing, flowing, coming and going, rising and falling. And I saw there was nothing to gain from trying to hold on to anything. It's like trying to catch a river in my fingers. There was no point. There was no point at all. There was nothing to gain from trying to hold on to hopes of future children to make everything right. There was no point in trying to hold on to status, fitting into a particular family, what they would think of me, what sort of respect they could give to me. No point worrying about what people think of me at all, actually. There's no point worrying about holding on to possessions. They would break and change and weren't really going to make me happy, weren't really going to make things okay. There's no point just trying to hold on to any of the ideas I'd had about myself and who I needed to be and what I needed to do and who I was, any of those stories, any of those ideas. The ideas of what I thought was going to make me happy and make me secure and make the world somehow how I wanted weren't going to work. Everything was just going to keep moving all the time. And the only response, the only thing to do with this was to follow the Buddha, to follow his teachings and really try and practice this deep understanding of life. To keep on opening my heart to the whole world, to the whole difficulty of being human in a changing world. To keep responding creatively to life, keep changing, keep flowing myself. So I told the Buddha I wanted to go forth, I wanted to leave my home life and travel with him. I wanted to join the band of disciples following his teachings and be part of that community, part of that Sangha. And he accepted me to do that. And that's what I've been doing ever since. For more than half of my life I've been following the Buddha and living in the Sangha. Travelling around all the time, reflecting, tuning in, noticing things, deepening my spiritual insight, deepening my reliance on that, my dependence on that as the important thing in my life, my guide to what's important to me. And sharing, communicating, helping others to live in harmony, in open-hearted relationship with the flow of life. And forming deep friendships with the women I live with as we do that. It's really travelling together. And we need each other. Of course, it's not easy being out on the road, out in the forests, you know, with no comfort, with no bed, no. We're reliant on alms food, on begging for food. You don't know what you're going to get. Sometimes we're a bit hungry, sometimes it's not what you choose. And, you know, there are bandits in some of the forests. It's not always safe, it's a bit scary. We really, you know, we need those friendships. We need each other as we travel the path. There are other challenges too. One day I had Mara come and visit me. I was just back from the alms round in this really dark forest, just sitting at the foot of a tree, and this figure approached me and said, "What's going on here? You look as if your child has died. You're sitting on your own. Are you looking for a man?" And I was a bit sort of bemused, like, who is this figure? This is a bit weird. But I thought, oh, I think it's Mara. I'm not even sure if this figure's a real solid human being. I think it's just the embodiment of my doubts and kind of questions to my resolve. And when I was really convinced of that, that really it was just things just trying to kind of spoil my meditation, actually spoil my practice and my peace, I answered him. I said, "I have finished with the death of my child. Men belong to the past. I don't grieve, I don't cry, and I'm not afraid of you, friend. Everywhere where love of pleasure is destroyed, the great dark is torn apart, and death too is destroyed." And Mara just vanished, this figure vanished. So it's not what I'd ever have expected my life to be like. It's not something you might think is very attractive. But it's fantastic. I feel so happy and free. Living without a house, without possessions, without fine clothes, without status, without anything. I'm just completely free. I just have rough robes to wear and my alms bowl and very little else. And it's wonderful. It's like it allows my heart to be as wide as the world, and from there, the whole world is my home. I don't need a set home because I'm so connected to everything, everybody. There's no sense of being separate and needing to anything to make that all right. It's just a fantastic life. I never could have understood that before this huge change in my life, but I just, yeah, feel so happy and so free. And when I look back over my life, I just feel so grateful to the Buddha for the way he was with me, the way he helped me. Everything I've become, the whole shape of my life, is due to that meeting. It's due to his kind friendship. It's like he was my first spiritual friend, and that encounter completely changed me and changed my life. Spiritual friendship is everything. If you haven't got somebody wise to keep good company with, how are you ever going to become free? How will you really become wise? I, Kisago Tami, have followed the Noble Eightfold Path to the Deathless. I have gazed in the mirror of the truth of the Dharma. The dart has been cut out of my heart, my burden laid down. I have done what was to be done. My mind and heart are released. There is no other refuge than the Buddha, the Dharma, the Sangha. They are the supreme reliance for me. That's what I can depend upon. All my life I go for refuge to the awakened one. All my life I go for refuge to the truth teachings. All my life I go for refuge to the community of wise ones.